All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado, Tony Pemica.
And Psychic Tom Paget, ready to go.
Yeah, we got another blockbuster show coming your way. We got lots to talk about. And finally, MMA is back on the schedule, so plenty of events to discuss there. We got UFC Fight Night 98 in Mexico City, November 5th here. We've got also Bellator 163, Liam McGeary versus Phil Davis. And I did end up getting an interview with Syed Awad, but Skype technical difficulties fucked me over on that one. I could barely hear him, he could barely hear me, and I couldn't get it figured out. I called him like 17 times trying to get it to work. It was bad. But he did say he's excited about this one, and I didn't get any usable audio, but... He talked a lot about, you know, this being the fight of the night, and, you know, he did mention that he's more of a striker than anything, so he probably is going to end this on the feet, if anything. So we'll be looking out for that one. Brandon Ward's a tough competitor, and it's going to be at Mohegan Sun, which is kind of his backyard. So a lot of Irish fans up that way, Irish Brandon Ward there.
Yeah, he's got to make a comeback. And you know, the pressure on him after that last one.
Syed comes in at 19-8. Brennan comes in at 13-4 for that one. Liam McGeary in the main event. He is undefeated at light heavyweight at 11-0. Phil Davis comes in at 16-3. He went through that whole tournament for the title shot there, and now he's going to face Liam. And we also had a development in the Coco main event, Marlowe's Conan, 23-7, fighting Talita Nogueira, who is 6-0. I think that's been called off because Nogueira badly, badly missed weight. I don't know if it was 17 pounds like that other guy we talked about a couple weeks ago. But she missed weight, so that's off. We also have Paul Daly back in action. He is 38-14-2, fighting Derek Anderson, who's 14-2. Sergey Karatonov, 23-5, fighting JV Ayala, who is 9-5. I got Josh Diekman, who I used to see fight in Plymouth, Massachusetts a lot. He is 15-7. He's fighting Tyler King, who's 11-4. And we got Blair Tugman, 8-6, fighting Walter Smith Cotito, who is 4-4. Mike Zischel, who is 8-4, fighting Tim Karen, 5-0. And a bunch of prospects rounding out the rest of the card. So there is an interesting one way down in the first fight of the night. Neiman Gracie fighting Rudy Bears. Neiman is 4-0. Rudy is 16-14. So, another Gracie entering mixed martial arts.
The legend continues. Well, yes. We'll see how he does.
And, of course, UFC Fight Night 98, Dos Anjos versus Ferguson. Rafael Dos Anjos, to be exact. And he is facing Tony Ferguson. And Tony is 21-3.
Oh, that is a tough fight. Yeah, go ahead.
Tony is 21-3. Rafael is 25-8. And this is a big deal fight. So Rafael's took a lot of flack from Conor McGregor for pulling out of that fight for an injury. And then Rafael lost the belt. And now Tony's trying to get in there and earn a title shot himself, I think, by beating Dos Anjos soundly. So we'll see, but it's going to be a great fight. And we got a co-main event of Martin Bravo, who's 10-0, and Claudio Puelas, who is 7-1. And tons of other great fights on this card. Diego Sanchez back in action. He is 26-9, fighting Marcin Held, who is 22-4. Ricardo.
Marcin Held signed with the UFC. I guess that's just new, huh?
Yeah,
he was with Bellator.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking myself. Wasn't he with Bellator?
No, I didn't even read about it. That's an interesting fight.
Yeah.
Diego seemed to peak so young, and then it's kind of been on a downside, but we'll see how it goes.
And we got some jiu-jitsu guys, one jiu-jitsu guy and big-time striker. Ricardo Lamas, 16-5, fighting Charles Oliveira, who's 21-6. That should be a nice matchup there. And we got Benil Dariush, who is 13-2, fighting Rashid Magomedov, who is 19-1. And we got a female fight, Alexa Grasso, 8-0, fighting Heather Clark, who's 7-5. Eric Perez on the card in the seventh fight of the night. He is 16-6, fighting Felipe Arantes, who is 18-7-1. And we got a guy that can fight on a week's notice, but usually prefers not to. Joe Soto, he's 16-5, fighting Marco Beltran, who's 8-3. And fifth fight of the night, Eric Montano, 7-4, fighting Max Griffin, who's 12-3. You got fourth fight of the night, Enrique Briones, 16-5-1, fighting Douglas Silva de Andrade, who is 23-1. Former guest of ours, Smiling Sam Alvey, 28-8, fighting Alex Nicholson, who is 7-2. Second fight of the night is Marco Polo. That's funny. Marco Polo Reyes. That's his real name. Marco Polo Reyes. He is 6-3. And Jason Novelli is going to be coming in screaming Marco's name. You can find him across the cage. He's 11-2 with one draw, Jason. And then the first fight of the night, Enrique Barzola fighting Chris Avila. Barzola is 11-3-1. Avila is 5-3. And it's a big Friday night fights on the boxing lineup as well. I need to talk about there. Let's see. Friday, November 4th. I know I saw some good ones here. There we go. Las Vegas, Treasure Island Casino. Bob Arum's got a card going. Main event there is for three belts.
Wow.
Jesse Hart at super middleweight. He is 20-0, fighting Andrew Hernandez, who is 16-4-1. Vacant NABF super middleweight title, the WBO NABO super middleweight title, and the USBA super middleweight title go to the winner there. And then we got the vacant WBC Continental America Super Featherweight title on the line between Casey Ramos, who's 23-0, and Andy Vences, who is 16-0. You'd think that would be for a world title with those kind of records, but no. Continental Americas. And we got welterweights Alex Saucedo, 22-0, fighting Raymond Serrano, who is 21-3. And all three of those losses in his last five fights, or six fights, I should say.
I've seen Serrano fight. Tough fighter, you know. Just one of those guys that he's a step below championship level.
You know who my favorite Serrano is? The guy from Major League.
Pedro Serrano?
You know, help me now. Fuck you. I do it myself.
Right.
Major League. Poor Indians. Yeah. Sorry, Tom.
No apology necessary. I had to pretty much write off major sports decades ago. I just can't get caught up in it because my crystal ball said, something horrible is going to happen. It just and I didn't want to get on that topic because it's just I went to rehab decades ago, and I'm on the straight and narrow now. Boxing and MMA, and I like to watch golf, play golf, and that's about it. Those are my sports. You know, the Browns. People come to Cleveland to get well, like the Cleveland Clinic, and to play the Browns.
Right.
Yeah, that's that old cliche. I mean, and it's going to go on and on and on. Passing on Carson Wentz, and look what he's doing with Philly. But that's a whole other topic.
Thank
so.
You for that, by the way.
But I do appreciate your tender condolences, my brother. Just your thoughts were well intended.
I would have been rooting for Cleveland because they took us out, but you know the Cubs had so many ex-Red Sox personnel and management, you know, so I kind of had to root for them after I watched a couple games. But it was a little bit longer drought for the Cubs, so they kind of had it coming. 108 freaking years. That was
108 years, you know,
almost as long as the
Red Sox. You can kind of say they had it coming.
So anyway.
I mean, come on, Richie Boston guys are only, you know, you guys only waited 86 years.
Yeah, and then the same guy that put the team together to do it for us goes to the Cubs, Theo Epstein, and does it for them. That's kind of crazy. I saw the celebration in the locker room, and they got the microphone in front of Theo, and he said something like, you know, whoever the co-manager is there, he says, you know, that guy's in charge. I'm going on a bender.
They learned it.
Yes, they have.
You know, it was kind of sad though. I was listening. I go around the radio stations in the morning. Just depends on what mood I'm in. And today I was flipping around that I got on the one Philadelphia Sports Radio Talk, and the one guy he's like a kind of a loudmouth Italian. So I kind of like think he's hilarious. I know a lot of people don't like him. But he gets on there, and he's sitting there, and he's like, I want you to listen to the Chicago announcer making the final call. He goes, they haven't won a World Series in 108 years. He goes, now, this guy's a very nice man. I'll give him that. But he goes, listen to this call, and he puts the call in there, and he goes, ground ball towards third. So-and-so gets it. He throws one over the first. And the Chicago Cubs are the World Series champions. He goes, he's like, that was putrid. That was horrible. It was like no emotion. It felt like it was the second game of the season. He's like, this is terrible. You know, because even Joe Buck was better than that. He was going off. It was hilarious. And then he made us all listen to when Harry Callis called it for the Phillies 8 years ago. He's like, that's how you do it. You know, not how this putrid garbage was.
Yeah.
First, we fired. Yeah, the Cleveland radio announcer, I guess, I don't listen, but I just pick it up by osmosis, and I guess he's quite a screamer.
You know, and like, you know, and you guys know me. Once again, I think it's my Italianism coming out. I'm like a very loud, hyperactive person. I got a loud voice. So especially when I get excited, oh, yeah, you'll know. You know, it was funny, Tom, before you came on the show, you know, Steve Cunningham, when he was champ of the world, I think the first time, and he's defending his title against, Polish kid, whose name, of course, I'm forgetting right now.
Thomas
they fought twice.
Adamek.
Both times were so close.
Thomas
and
not Adamek,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Tomas Adamek. That's who it was.
Okay.
So we come up with this great idea because Rich used to do a webcam. So when we were doing our show live, you could actually see Rich. You couldn't see me, which most of the time you probably wouldn't want to because I have my hair in the Don King style, looking ridiculous.
You put your finger in a light socket, huh?
Pretty much. So, like half the time I'm not even looking at the computer screen. I'm like looking around my room and stuff. But what we did for that one was we trained Rich's webcam on his TV. So over our, you know, show, you could actually see the fight. And we come up with the great idea that we're going to mute the TV and we're going to do the live play-by-play. Which what actually kind of surprised me at first was because I always thought I'd be a better color man, just because of, you know, my little stories and my anecdotes and stuff like that. But I found myself being more of the play-by-play guy. Cunningham comes out, he's moving behind the jab. He's setting it up here. He's, you know, feigning and stuff like that. Adam Axe trying to counter with the right hand. I was doing more of the play-by-play. The second round, Cunningham gets caught about 10 seconds ago in the round, and he goes down, which got my surprised, oh, shit, he's down. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if, like the real broadcast, like, you know, ESPN and all that, I don't know if they'd approve of hiring me.
Impartiality
and a family-rated vocabulary, right?
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite baseball stories is when I went to the last game of the year one year, and it went into the 15th inning against the Milwaukee Brewers, and it was actually Robin Yount's last game. He was retiring, so we stuck around, and me and a couple friends, and we used to like to scope out seats near the, you know, the wall, basically, any wall, any area, you know, just look for the seats that people have abandoned and then go sneak in them. So we got it right, a couple seats right behind the opposing dugout. And the whole game, like the last few innings that we were there, we're just giving the ball boy shit, trying to get a ball, you know. So, you know, we're screaming and yelling. And then B.J. Surhoff comes up to the plate. And, of course, they announce the name B.J. Surhoff. So my buddy Ben just yells as loud as possible, "Hey, what does B.J. stand for?" Right as he's coming up to the plate. And, like, everybody in the park heard it. Like, it was bad. And all of a sudden, BJ looks directly at us all, like he heard it. He gave my friend the nastiest look. Oh, my God. He did not like that. So, and I ended up getting a souvenir hat from somebody who ripped their hat up, but that was too crazy. I thought he was going to drop his bat and run into the stands. I guess he does not like that joke.
Yeah. You know what? That reminds me of that movie that came out a couple years ago, Grudge Match, with Stallone and De Niro.
Oh, I still haven't seen it.
And, like, you know, De Niro's, like, you know, the big-time womanizer and everything, and he comes to find out that he had a son when he had an affair with Stallone's, you know, former girlfriend. And he comes to meet the son, and he's like, you know, yeah, my name is BJ. He's like, oh. You know, what's that stand for? He's like, yeah, well, it stands for whatever, like Bradley James or something. He goes, but I prefer BJ. He goes, yeah, he goes, well, it's good to be, you know, good to get one, not to be called one.
It's tough. Tough name. Tough initials.
Yeah, a little bit.
Anyway, Friday night Showbox on Showtime. Got a pretty decent card. Getting back to our schedule, we got welterweights Taras Shelestyuk, who is 14-0, and he's fighting Jamie Herrera, who's 15-3-1. And we got a fight for a couple belts, the WBC International Cruiserweight title and the Continental Americas Cruiserweight title, also from the WBC. So he's going to be the International and the Continental Americas Cruiserweight title holder here, whoever wins this one. Don't make sense. Okay, you're international and you're continental. One of them sounds bigger than the other one. Anyway, Stevens Bujage comes in at 16-0-1, fighting Konstantin Behenaru, who is 11-0. And we got a couple of good supporting bouts here. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. It starts with an X. X-O-L-I-S-A-N-I. Zolasani, I guess. Ndogeni. He is 21-0. Fighting Juan Garcia Mendez, who's 19-1-1. That about rounds out that card. There are also another lightweight fight. Vitor Jones Freitas, who is 13-0. Fighting Manuel Mendez, who is 12-1-2. And we go to Oscar De La Hoya's card in Los Angeles. Main event there is Jose Ramirez, 28-6, versus Manuel Avila, who is 21-0 at featherweight. And then the co-main event there is nothing too good, but Emilio Sanchez, undefeated at 12-0 at Super Bantamweight. He's fighting Diul Olguin, who is 11-4-3. And you gotta love the Little Rock, Arkansas event here that they list, where every single fighter except one is fighting TBA, and the fight's tomorrow.
TBA, you know, that guy with three draws, he doesn't have a ton of fights to have three draws. I wonder what his style is.
I don't know.
Draws are just kind of uncommon anymore. I think we used to see more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, you'd have people like Big Time. It would be something along the lines like, you know, 7-8 draws.
Yeah. And you just don't hear about it that much now.
That's about it for...
I mean, I'm glad that option's there. A draw's a draw.
Right.
You can't fight all night, but it kind of intrigued me there. I just didn't seem like he'd had that many fights, you know?
And we got a couple titles
on
the line. A lot of titles on the line in Germany this Saturday. Two different events. One in Brandenburg with super middleweights fighting for the world super middleweight title. Giovanni Di Carolis, who is 24-6-1, fighting Tyrone Zug, who is 18-0-1. And then we've got the vacant Global Boxing Union world welterweight title on the line between Dennis Ilbe, 16-1, and Anzor Gumgabili, who is 30 wins, 16 losses, 3 draws. And that gives you a perspective on, you know, somebody else who's got 3 draws. This guy's got 46 fights in addition to those 3 draws. And then we've got some female titles on the line in Bayern, Munich, Bayern, Germany. We got Christina Hammer, 19-0, fighting Kali Rice, who is 10-5-1. So the WBO World Female Middleweight title and the WBC World Female Middleweight title. Main event there is super middleweights Avni Yildirim, who's 13-0, fighting Schiller Hippolyte, who is 21-1. That's for the vacant WBC International Silver Super Middleweight title. And then the WBC Youth World Cruiserweight titles on the line between Tony Kraft, who's 9-0, and TBA. TBA is fighting for a title this week.
That's congratulations, TBA. I know he's really been moving up the rankings.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes on the same card, I've noticed that if you can imagine, you finish your fight, hey, no one showed, you got to get back out there again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so you're right. Fight.
And the guy's got weight cutting down better than you do, Tony. Keeping him all over the board. You know, that.
I mean, I think he's fighting heavyweight, and then a few minutes later, he'll be fighting down a junior welterweight.
And speaking of heavyweights, Timur Musafarov, also on this card. He's 8-2, fighting a guy with 24 more wins than he has. Francesco Pianetta. He comes in with 32 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw, fighting a guy who's 8-2. That's a tough draw. Tough one there. Let's see what else is going on Saturday.
I just said, guy's either very talented or he needs a payday. Uh-huh. Fighting someone with 24 more wins. Wow. One of the two.
We'll find out, I guess. Still got stuff on Saturday here. The EBU female lightweight title is on the line in Lomianki, Poland on Saturday. Jua Brodnicka, 11-0, fighting Anita Torti, who is 10-5-1 there. Michael Sprott is also on that card. What about a blast from the past? Michael Sprott, 42-26, with no draws. Fighting Marcin Siwi, who is 15-0 at heavyweight. I guess he's become a professional Polish opponent. Michael Sprott. We go to the United Kingdom on Saturday. We got some interesting bouts here. Philip Sutcliffe Jr., 11-1 at super lightweight, fighting Chris Jenkins, who's 16-1-1. We got Marco McCullough at featherweight, 15-3, fighting Luis Lugo, who is 17-5-3. That's for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Featherweight title. Nothing else too great there on that card. And, of course, the big one, the big one, we didn't even mention yet, Jesse Vargas versus Manny Pacquiao.
That is, yeah.
Another Bob Arum card this weekend at the Thomas and Mack Center.
Funny, that fight's been so under the radar.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what they're charging for the pay-per-view on that. Does anyone know?
I don't. Now it's top of my head. I'll see if I can look right now.
Yeah, because Arum's very confident that it's going to be a just a real big draw. I don't share his confidence.
I don't share his confidence either because, you know what, like I said, I was just reading about this fight the other day, and that quickly, I just totally blacked out about it.
I think there's probably still some hangover from last year, the Mayweather fiasco.
Probably. Anyway, Jesse comes in at 27-1. Pacquiao comes in at 58-6-2. The WBO World Welterweight title online. And some pretty interesting supporting bouts here. But the thing that blows my mind is after the three supporting bouts, there's like nothing. I mean, there's just two guys doing their pro debut here. So it's kind of thin below the main attractions here. But anyway, Nonito Donaire in the co-main event comes in at 37-3, fighting Jesse Magdaleno, who is undefeated, 23-0, fighting for the WBO World Super Bantamweight title. And we got featherweights, Oscar Valdez, undefeated as well, 20-0, fighting Hiroshige Osawa, who has 30 wins, 3 draws, no, 3 losses, and 4 draws. And then the vacant WBO World Flyweight title on the line between a couple of Asian guys here. Shiming Zhu, 8-1, I believe he's from China, at flyweight, fighting Prasitsak Fapram, who is 39-1-2. That's for the vacant WBO World Flyweight title. So that about rounds it out. As far as the main event there, Vargas versus Pacquiao, I want to say Pacquiao has what it takes to get the job done, but at the same time, Vargas would really gain a lot of momentum by beating Pacquiao. And I wouldn't put it past him to put forth that kind of effort that it would take.
Oh, I absolutely wouldn't put it past him. I mean, I saw Vargas fight in person. He was an underdog. It was on that Pacquiao-Bradley undercard.
Right.
And, you know, he came in there as an underdog, and he won. And then, you know, he had that real close fight to Timothy Bradley. He had Bradley basically out on his feet in the last round. And then, you know, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name because I don't have it in front of me. But he had the undefeated fighter. I forget if he was Middle Eastern, but he ended up destroying him. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, you know, a good fighter. Now here's the thing: is like the wild card here, no pun intended, who trains at the wild card gym is Manny Pacquiao, because you know Pacquiao is not getting any younger. You know, he had that just pitiful loss to Mayweather, but he came back, you know, and he, you know, looked impressive against Bradley in his fight after that. But, you know, he had a guy down twice and he failed to stop him. So now you got, you know, a young guy, a hungry guy, you know, so it was almost like the young lion against the old lion.
Yeah, and is Pac-Man fighting for money? That's the question, too.
Oh, it's a good question, you know?
I think so.
Because that is a recipe for disaster. Is he overconfident, and is he just in there for the money?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, is he in there thinking he can get another chance at, you know, Floyd Mayweather? Which I hope not.
Stop it.
Yeah. No. And the only reason I say it is I saw something online today.
Oh, no.
And I said the same thing. I said, oh, dear Lord, no.
Great minds think alike, buddy.
Yep. I'm looking on here. I was trying to find a card. Starts 9 p.m. Here's a full look at the card. Zhao Ximing is fighting. Good fighter. Nonita Denair. Oscar Valdez, boom, boom, boom. Pacquiao 37, yeah, we know that. Vargas 27. Doesn't give me a price. But I, being the genius that I am, modest as well, I'm going to try to find as soon as I click on my TV. Here we go. Pacquiao Vargas. Oh, thanks for giving me the channel, Zoma, not giving me a price. No, I'm not ordering it now. I click on my TV, I click on info, and before it even brings me into the schedule, it's like, hey, we got a pay-per-view coming up. Why don't you buy it? But we're not going to tell you what it is. We're not going to tell you how much it costs. So let's try this. See if I'm as good as I say I am.
Now, Tony, are you getting ready to see the big Miles Teller movie there? Bleed for this?
Actually, I was going to bring something up about that a little bit ago. Yes, I'm absolutely ready to see it. I don't know if it's coming out a little bit sooner in New England because, you know, obviously that's... has his, you know, home territory, but it is scheduled to come out down here in 2 weeks, that being November the 18th. And I was actually at the fitness center last night, tornado sizing, as I often do, and it had, you know, commercials on the TV, and I was like, oh, shit, there it is on TV, too!
So when are you
going to... Yeah, it's coming on the 18th here, too, Tony. It's about the same release. So
when's the Tornado Size DVD set coming out?
What'd you say, Rich?
When's the Tornado Size DVD set coming out?
We'll have to keep you on your toes for that one.
Hey, if it works for DDP yoga, you never know.
But, you know, and I said this to Vinny a couple years ago when we were talking to him, and I said, you know, Sylvester Stallone should have kicked himself for releasing Rocky V in 1990, because that was, you know, a couple years, it came out about a year or so before Vinny's car accident. But I said, I mean, talk about, like, the overall perfect story. I mean, you got it right here. I mean, just the first part of it would have made a good enough movie. You know, a guy was champ of the world. You know, and he had a few losses. He was down on his luck. He was having a hard time making weight. They were telling him to retire. And he loses all of his money. Credit union freezes up. So he decides he has to keep fighting. He moves up in weight. Takes on the undefeated French champion as an underdog. And he knocks him out. He beats the shit out of him and wins the world title. You know, that's a good enough story right there. But then to make it better, you know, you know, a couple weeks later, you know, he breaks his neck. And he may never walk again, but he's determined to fight and he starts training. And, you know, it actually sounds unrealistic. It sounds like a Rocky movie, to be truthful.
Right.
But then a year later, he comes back and he ends up winning another couple world titles. You know, it's like, that sounds like an impossible story, but it's true.
Yeah, and you know, you can never forget the press conference he had with the big fucking halo on his head.
You know? Yeah, I wouldn't say. I am going to fight again.
Yeah.
It's like, no way, dude.
Yeah, you're all fucked up.
The guy ended up fighting him.
You got a halo on your head, dude. Come on.
And they said, like, how ironic for somebody that was called the devil.
Yeah. And we met him down there at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication. He was wicked cool with us. He was like...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We were, like, part of his crew. he was looking for us to tell him where the party was.
About a month or so before that, because my dad still has them, I told him I got to get him a new one because they're really starting to get beat up now. And you'll laugh at this, Tom. About, let's see, we are in 2016. So about 17 years ago. So I know it had to be 1999 because I was still wearing glasses. And I have a picture, Christmas morning, and when I was giving my dad his presents, and I was wearing glasses. And one was a Vinnie Paz t-shirt. I bought two of them, and I think he stole mine. And the other one was a fight poster from the Paz Rosenblatt fight that we went to. And my dad still, you know, wears that shirt. So a couple years ago, he was wearing it the one day. He was at the sink and doing whatever. So I went over, snuck up behind him, snapped a picture of him. And I Facebooked the Vinnie Paz. He's like, oh, my God, yo, your dad, what's up? That's so awesome. So, you know... He was legitimately happy that, you know, my dad was wearing a shirt. So a couple of years ago, when we were going to the statue dedication, I'm like, your dad, wear the Vinnie Paz shirt. He did, because I knew Vinnie would be there. So I'm like, hey, Vinnie, I want you to finally get a chance to meet my dad. And he's like, when he sees my dad wearing a shirt, he's like, oh, man, what's up? He's like talking to my dad like they're best friends.
Yeah, he is that type.
Yeah,
that
fight was such a classic. I mean, all the talk before. And then even Sean O'Grady with re-christening Dana as Dana Rosensplat. Yeah, that was
yep. Always... Hey, Rich, he Dana. Ain't so dangerous no more.
Yeah. He ain't so dangerous.
Oh, by the way, guys, $64.99 for the pay-per-view.
Wow.
That's ouch.
Yeah.
Well, who am I to give Bob Arum advice? Bob Arum didn't call the psychic line. If he would, we'd discuss it. But I guess he feels he can proceed without my guidance. We'll see how it goes. Wow, 64. Well, we shall see.
And as far as news stuff, I don't really have a lot on boxing. I do know that the big heavyweight championship bout between Anthony Joshua and... what's his name? Vladimir Klitschko is off because Klitschko is injured now. So
yeah.
It's like, you know, this fight is never going to happen. First, it's with Tyson Fury.
Who cares? No, November 19th. That's all that matters.
Kovalev.
And there's all kinds of stuff on YouTube. You just Google Ward Kovalev. HBO ad has been doing their thing. And I think there's another half-hour one, too. I didn't really know a lot about Ward's background, losing his dad so early, and had kind of a rough road. Then Kovalev, they went back to the apartment he grew up in Russia.
Yeah.
So they both had very rough sledding when they were young, for sure.
Yeah, pretty crazy. In UFC news, we have Uriah Faber announcing that his next fight will be his last. Ronda Rousey also hinting, and Dana White also confirming that her MMA career is winding down, and that she's basically going to be going towards movies and I think the WWE. She's going to do more with them, I think. Well, I'm not sure exactly how many fights are on her contract, or if it is a fight-based contract, fight number, because it could be different for her, seeing as she and Dana White had the same agents who ended up being owners of the UFC, the whole agency. She might have a different contract, you know, with all the Hollywood stuff. And then, of course, there's the Nevada...
Because I believe...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
Didn't she say she just is going to have two more fights, right? She's going to this next one, and then she said one more opponent unspecified.
Yeah, I didn't read too much about it, but I have seen the headline, so I just figured I'd mention it. I don't think anybody's surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had the choice to keep fighting in her position or go make more money doing movies and fake wrestling, I mean, I think you'd do the same thing.
Well, it just depends how her career will go, because remember, Gina Carano, I think, had the same plan. I don't think it really went like she thought. That's not a given.
She wasn't as big a star, though. You'd have to admit that, because she never really got to fight a major UFC fight. You know, she was still in there, and Strikeforce was, you know, either under different ownership or kind of in limbo. But Rousey's really gone from nobody to superstar pretty quickly here. And, it's taken her a while to get back in there and commit to having another fight. And it's just pretty much all year this year we were wondering, when is she going to fight? And then finally she decided to fight at the end of the year. But we're really going to have to watch out for how she performs in that one fight. And if she does get the belt back, then... You know, obviously she's going to have her confidence back, so everything may change. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Again, that's just such a question mark. It's going to tell us a lot, because on paper you think that she definitely should get that belt back. But maybe she's changed a lot. Sometimes one fight can do it. And the feeling, even if she gets it back, if she says one more going away fight, I kind of get the feeling it won't be Cyborg.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
And then we got some Nevada State Athletic Commission news. They had a disciplinary hearing set up the other day for Brock Lesnar and John Jones. And apparently there's...
Maggie Hassan's priority is not the safety and welfare of the patients at New Hampshire Hospital. For months, we've tried...
New Hampshire politics... but anyway, as I was saying, Brock Lesnar's legal team is requesting a continuance for his hearing, I guess. And then John Jones, his hearing was inconclusive, so we don't know what's going to happen with him. But he's looking at some type of suspension. And the latest word on his case is that John Jones supposedly took a supplement that had the banned substance in it, and the supplement was tested, did not have the stuff on the label, but it was in there. So definitely one of those cases where the supplement companies aren't doing their job and listing
it. Did it say what the supplement was, Rich? Was it an herbal substance or a protein or
creatine? I did read the article, but I forget exactly what it was. It wasn't like one of the standard steroids or anything, but
yeah,
it was a banned substance. But the Brock Lesnar case could have big implications for the UFC because of Mark Hunt talking about suing over that whole situation and not being happy about having to face all these dopers, because this isn't the first guy he's faced that has been doping. I think Bigfoot Silva got caught up in some PED situation after their fight. And then I think there was one other guy. But anyway, so Lesnar is, get this, Lesnar's attorney is having a foot cream he took tested to see if it comes back for the banned substance he tested positive for. He tested positive for clomiphene. And, I don't know, that's a new one. Foot cream. I've heard of, libido drugs, but foot cream is pretty crazy. Lesnar also had an eye medication tested independently in an effort to find out what caused his positive test, but the eye medication came back negative for clomiphene. He's facing sanctions from USADA for failing two drug tests. One, clomiphene, which is an anti-estrogen agent. And then that was an in-competition and out-of-competition tests. And I guess both drug tests were for the same thing. I guess I read that wrong. But anyway, the result could be overturned by the commission to a no contest. They could also fine and suspend Lesnar, while the USADA will likely only suspend him. And he's facing a maximum 1-year suspension. Not that he's coming back anytime soon anyway. Jones tested positive, here it is, for clomiphene, same thing, and letrozole, both anti-estrogen agents, in an out-of-competition test before UFC 200. And Jones had his arbitration on Monday. The decision is expected back before the NAC hearing next week. That's funny. Jones and Lesnar have the same lawyer, too. Leading anti-doping attorney. That's pretty funny. Alright. Wild stuff. But I've been thinking a lot about this whole UFC situation with a lot of these fighters lately, talking about unions more, and then, you know, asking for releases from the contracts. You never, ever saw that under Fertitta ownership, where guys, unless, except for Conor McGregor's beef there, talking about retiring rather than fighting again. You know, you never really saw that with them. They had, you know, some kind of an iron grip on the organization. And a lot of fighters were kind of either scared to or not willing to speak out, just fearing that there would be reprisals or there would be some type of punishment. And now you have a situation where the whole thing was sold for $4.2 billion, and the people who have got it now, I think, are starting to realize that it's going to be a little bit more of a headache than they thought it was going to be. Because what they didn't realize with that $4.2 billion price tag was that now all these fighters who have been complaining and all these fighters who have already sued or are thinking about suing and joining that lawsuit have a number value to put on the organization that they contributed to building. So yeah. You know, now they're going to want a bigger piece of the pie. So in a lot of ways, that was horrible for them to put that type of price tag on it, because number one, you know, everybody knows who has followed the money of the MMA scene that the UFC is not worth $4.2 billion. It's just not. And that's what they paid. So, and obviously they're having issues right away. They've laid off a shitload of people. And now all these fighters starting to talk about unions and, you know, getting antsy about, you know, not getting fights they've been promised. And, you know, just all these issues starting to come to a head. And I've never gotten the impression that this new ownership is coming in with a set plan of what they're going to do. And like, you know, a blueprint. They don't really seem to have too much, you know, a set of goals. And, you know, they haven't really come out in public and talked about it much that I've seen. There hasn't been a lot of articles about, you know, what the new look UFC is going to be like. It pretty much gave the reins back to Dana and said, keep doing your thing. Business as usual with a few layoffs. But, you know, I gotta wonder where does this go from here? And did the Fertittas really pull a fast one on these guys and leave them with a bunch of shit that they didn't plan for? Because to me, the big thing, like I said, is that $4.2 billion price tag, and a lot of these fighters, now that they know the value of the organization. Yeah.
I wonder how Joe Silva's leading, if that was in any way connected to this.
I don't know, but there was that situation there. I think I talked about it last week, where there was a fighter on the Brazil card, I believe it was, that ended up getting, the whole card got canceled because the BJ Penn fight got canceled. But one of the guys, I'll find the article in a minute here. One of the guys fighting on that card was told by Joe Silva, you either fight or you're fired. And so now Joe Silva no longer has a job, but, I mean, I don't know if it's related to that. He, I think, From talking to Ken Pavia, though, I do remember him saying Joe Silva had a hellish situation with the UFC. They really had him by the balls in a lot of situations with his finances and, you know, basically having him under contract. And Joe was told that he couldn't even communicate with Ken anymore after he had his beef with Dana White. So, all kinds of crazy stuff. And those two used to be really, really good friends, Ken and Joe. So that was a surprise, but crazy stuff. Anyway. I don't know if we talked about this either, but let me get to this guy who got fired first. And we'll talk about that, but there it is. Mehdi Baghdad, who was forced to cancel his John Tuck showdown at the ill-fated UFC Fight Night 97 combat sports spectacle, it wasn't in Brazil, was for slated for UFC Fight Pass in Manila, the Philippines. So he was unconditionally released because he said he couldn't fight. He said, "I was in emergency the night before. I gave the bad news that I had to pull out. I called my manager. My manager called Joe Silva, and Joe Silva just answered back like, 'You need to pull out? We cut you.' And my manager said, 'Come on, man. You can't do that. The doctor said that he has to do surgery. He can't fight. And then he forced him to fight? He can't. He has to do surgery.' So my manager let me know, 'They need you to go fight or you are fired.' And so Baghdad opted for surgery to repair his hernia and did not fight. So, I mean, that's grounds for a lawsuit right there, I would think. I mean, I know they have crazy to fight contracts. You know, they're just asinine, according to George St. Pierre's management, and super controlling with their setups, but just nuts that they would do that and tell this guy, "I don't care if you have a hernia, you got to fight." That should be illegal, never mind cause for a lawsuit. It just should not be allowed. I mean, under just basic morals, you know, you should never be able to do that to a fighter. Say, "All right, well, I know you're fucked up, but you still have to fight." And that happens in the movies. It's not supposed to happen in real life. You know, the guy in the pit fights in the big mob movie or something might have to do that. Fight with a bad leg or fucked up arm, you know, but not in sports. Should not happen. Anyway. What was I going to talk about? Oh, the first case of CTE has been detected in an MMA fighter, and it actually happened due to the hit-and-run death that we talked about last May. Jordan Parsons died at the age of 25 there, the drunk driver with the SUV that hit him going 100 miles an hour and already had a suspended license. It's a crazy case. But the Boston Globe has a report that the fighter there, Jordan Parsons, had already been suffering from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, which is the main basis of the NFL concussion lawsuits. So CTE is a degenerative brain disease directly associated with countless blows to the head. And Parsons had it. And they say it's an alarming diagnosis, not only because Parsons had compiled just 13 professional fights, but also due to the assumption that MMA is a safe sport when compared to the NFL and even WWE. So this test confirms that it's the danger is not just limited to football, hockey, and wrestling. MMA is also just as dangerous. So we'll have to keep looking at that. Other than that, that's about all the news and updates I have.
Before we go, I didn't get a chance to, you know, do any writing. I've been, you know, pretty swamped, you know, this week. But I do want to give a somewhat prediction on this weekend's fight. And basically what I see happening here is Vargas is going to be the hungry fighter. You know, he is going to bring the fight to Pacquiao. But in a way, that's going to help Pacquiao a little bit because he does his best work against very aggressive fighters. You know, the Cotos, the Margaritos, the Hattons of the world, guys that really try to bring the fight to him as opposed to the Mayweathers and the Marquezes who really use a lot of angles and try to box him. Vargas's best chance to win would be to doing just that. You know, use angles, use his jab, you know, force Pacquiao to come in and then counterpunch him on his way in. You know, Vargas is the taller man, has the longer arms. Pacquiao is going to have the definite advantages in speed. He also has an advantage in pure power. Vargas, not known as much of a puncher, but he is improving. He is sitting down on his punches more and more. With that being said, it's going to be a close fight. It's going to be closer than a lot of people think it is. And I see there are times that, you know, Vargas is really going to land some really good right hands on Pacquiao. You know, Pacquiao is going to throw his punches and bunches. And coming down to and Pacquiao might score a flash knockdown, maybe, you know, off like a counter left hand that knocked Vargas off balance, maybe to the seat of his trunks. I don't think you're going to see a knockout of any kind here. Unless one fighter gets caught. I think when it's over, a lot of people are going to say that they're going to favor Vargas. But Pacquiao will get the decision. Maybe on one name more than anything.
Yeah, it's very hard to argue with you on that. But I can't wait for your write-up on Ward and Kovalev.
I'm going to try to make some time to do.
Yeah, like you said, there's all kinds of stuff. I'd send you guys the links, but just go to YouTube. Go from there.
It's my Halloween costumes. I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to ask you about that. We didn't have the show, but forgot to ask you about your Halloween costume.
Me. You know, one thing I don't give up is my Halloween costumes.
So what'd you go as this year?
Well, we had a party at work where I was one of the judges, and that one I broke out because my other costume wasn't ready yet. I broke my old Randy. I wore it out to the bar on Saturday night was because there was a guy there in a store-bought Randy Savage costume. You know me, I don't buy my costumes, I make them. This year, I went as another classic. You know, I'm a big wrestling nerd, and I decided to this year go with the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels.
There you go.
Like the mid 90s version with the mullet and, like, you know, the hat, you know, all the crazy shit. So I will send you a picture, and then I'll tell you, if you're not familiar with him, I'll tell you to Google him mid 90s, and then do a comparison. Tell me how I did.
All right. All right, gentlemen, till next week, that's all we have here, and we'll have a guest for our listeners for sure. I'm going to work on doing that over the next week here, and hopefully we'll have some good fighting action to talk about over the weekend. We'll be talking about next week. All righty. Adios.
Enjoy the weekend of fights. All right.